Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you this episode after last week's conversation with Rory Groves that was thought-provoking to me in a lot of areas. Even after spending a lot of time reading his book, Durable Trades, thinking about it, employing it in my family or applying it in with my family, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode if you missed it. It was very encouraging, a lot of practical stuff. Carve out an hour, listen to it, get the book Durable Trades, and figure out how it may apply to you and your family and your community as you seek to build a more durable lifestyle, a lifestyle that has more agency. And one of the things that we talked about in that episode is Rory mentioned how churches used to be the center of societies. We see in Europe that these great cathedrals are kind of at the hub of areas of all the streets kind of terminate in a giant square around the church. And we relied on the church. And what that actually meant, Rory said, was we relied on each other. This was prior to government programs and cheap commoditized goods, how we had, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, reorganized society towards efficient markets and phasing out relationship. And Rory said, and I agree, that those times are going to return where these superstructures, these highly efficient, quote unquote, organizations that are highly bureaucratic are not going to be able to keep up at the pace, because at the same time, they are becoming more and more woke. They are doing all these side things that don't benefit us, the consumer. There are layers upon layers of things. I'm going to talk about that more in the future. We're not going to talk about bureaucracy, although I have a long history dealing with that junk. We're going to talk about the church today. I'm coming off of a glorious Easter weekend. Not because I had a few days off from work. I actually spent all of Friday doing estimates for a big construction project. I was working hard on days that the people were strolling the streets outside my office and partaking in the consumer economy. Not because I had days off from work. Was it glorious? Not because there was something great on TV or there was a good game or whatever, but because I enjoyed rich fellowship with my family at church. And I say my family at church because we kind of have a saying where in our church that water is thicker than blood. And we say that because our baptism and our vows to each other and membership are more important than necessarily who we were born into, or that the commitment that we make to each other is important. And we're going to live life with each other and be committed to each other, almost like a marriage. We've chosen to be in fellowship together. And this past week, we had a Monday Thursday service. We had a Good Friday service. We had a huge breakfast Sunday morning starting around 8 o'clock, Easter egg hunt with the kids. We have 85 kids under the age of 14 and under, I guess. Then we did our regular morning worship service. And a lot of us got to the church around 7:30, setting things up, setting up tables, hiding Easter eggs, having great conversations, starting to drink the coffee, maybe swinging by the dessert table and snagging a donut before it was officially time, really enjoying each other's company, even for an hour of meals with each other, having the kids kind of chomping at the bit to go out the door. I was in charge of wrangling them with my amazingly loud voice. So letting the kids run around and have fellowship with each other and, you know, kind of then coming back into the church and going into worship around 10 o'clock. And what's crazy is that we were there at almost 12 o'clock still. So we enjoyed, you know, nearly 5 hours of fellowship with people. Our family's plan, we were walking out of the parking lot. There's a couple of families kind of lingering around still. I looked over at my wife. I said, hey, you know, can we invite some people back to Linden, the big house? And because we had short-term renters check out. And so we had a plan to go there and, you know, take naps in real beds and showers in real showers. I don't know if any of y'all have been following, but I live in a bus right now. And we are going to have put the ham in the oven and have dinner with my wife's family and enjoy fellowship with them. And so I kind of looked over at my wife and said, hey, can we invite his family back with us? And she kind of was like, yeah, sure. So we swung by the grocery store. We bought some more snacks. We got some wine and we convened at the big house. Our kids, we had 9 kids running around. I texted another guy at church that lives 1 block away, had him come over. So he came over with his 4 kids. I texted a friend of mine from the military, and my wife was kind of joke with me how people just kind of kept showing up. So once she cracks the door, hospitality, this extrovert gets going. I start bringing people in. So we had sat around the yard. It was just a glorious day, beautiful weather in the gardens that were not planted by me, that were planted by the family we bought the house from. Just great. The grounds of the house is magnificent. We're just able to sit there and talk, sip wine, have our kids running around, kind of eat the whole day. And then, you know, my wife was even able to get her nap in a little bit later on in the afternoon. My in-laws showed up. We had a great dinner and closed the day out absolutely exhausted. It was a lot of work. It was probably more work for my wife bringing these goods from afar, creating these meals. She's also responsible for music because she's the pianist at church. But ultimately, we didn't get to enjoy a weekend like that without decade plus work. We've been at this church since, I think, September 2009. So closing in on 13 years of time being with these people. And there's been a lot of people that have come and gone in that time, but there's still a large group of people that are still there. And there's more people coming in and there's more families joining. We actually have people coming from afar that are moving to this area to join the church. They have seen kind of what's going on. They're looking around where they are. And I wanted to give you 3 things that you should look at in a church if you're one of those people that's still kind of struggling to find the church for you, the church for your family. So I'll give you 3 things to look as you evaluate a church, and then what to do if you can't find a church that meets these 3 criteria. And then once you found that church, I got about 3 to 5 things that I think that you should do. And this is also going to be for those of you in church that are maybe listening to this summary of what I've said and kind of thinking, man, that's not how my church is. That's not what I enjoy. That's, you know, you were in church and you're saying, oh, they're a bunch of hypocrites. True. We are. We're a bunch of hypocrites. We need Jesus. I can't be involved with those people, whatever. I want this to be just kind of the overarching podcast episode to encourage those of you that are in a church, but maybe not feeling like you're getting the benefits of it and it's hurting a little bit. Those of you that are on the fence, that don't really want to go, they got some baggage from church before, or those of you that are just kind of scared about the future. Because I've said on social media before, if you're worried about the future, then you're probably not hanging out with the right people and doing it as consistently as you should be. Because those of us in the church, the real church, the ones committed to doing Christ's work here and now, hopeful of his return, taking the earth, partnering with him towards remaking it towards his glory, we're fired up right now. We're having a great time. We're enjoying fellowship. All through COVID, we were enjoying it. I mean, literally, I was talking to a guy the other day. We're going to the doors of the church for the last 2 years, and it has felt like a oasis in a barren land, which is how the church should be and how it has been. And we've actually enjoyed relationship and fellowship throughout these last 2 years, that we've come out of this stronger together. We've come out of it more communal. And it's because we're doing the work, because we didn't stop. Like we see in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 23 and 25, let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering. We were holding fast. We were the confession without wavering, not canceling worship, not doing all these government things, but staying and holding fast. For he who promises is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Then let's go to Proverbs 18. Whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire and breaks out against all sound judgment. Don't forsake meeting together. Figure out how to stir each other up to love and good works. Don't seek your own desire. Seek the desire of our Heavenly Father. So, three things that you should look for in a church. Two things. The third thing's kind of a piggyback on it. The most reverent view of God in its ceremonies and its worships, and God-centered. Not trying to give you a little dose of emotional high, not trying to have, you know, it be a rock concert to entertain you, but to come in and to be work, to offer acceptable praises to God, and to be approaching the heavenly places, trying to enter the heavenly places with reverence. If that's not your church, you need to look somewhere else. You need to seek to have worship be trying to offer praises to God versus trying to offer praises to you or experience to you. Also, the church needs to have men in charge. Now, I'm not talking about biologically that they're men, that their skinny jeans have man parts in them. I'm saying men that are, as we've talked about before, leading themselves, masters of themselves, body, soul, and spirit, and leading their family well, like we've talked about kind of in this Theology of Violence podcast episodes, where we talk about how do you lead yourself, how do you lead your family, and then when they're doing both of those things well, now they're leading in the church. Now, I don't want y'all to get triggered. Those of y'all that have baggage because you had a hyper-patriarchal father or whatever that is actually in some ways serving the father of lies in the way that he was domineering in his family. I'm talking about the men that understand the role of the woman correctly, the man that treats his wife like Christ's bride, that lays himself down for her, that lays himself down for his family. I had a conversation with one of the ladies in our church. She's a divorced woman, and she said she never understood that until she came to our church and she saw the leaders of the church and was in fellowship with them and their wives and realized that these strong men aren't oppressive to their women. I mean, that's a joke around here that everybody say, you know, like my wife is being oppressed by me, that I'm domineering over her. And everybody who, and all the, there's, you know, a dozen leaders in our church, in the session, and the elders and the deacons that have wives, and everybody that's in fellowship with us knows that our women are glorious women, our women that take what we do and make it beautiful and make it, they amplify it. They have our children are being raised in a protected environment, but they're in there flourishing within the garden that we as men are tending to. We're giving them a safe place, and that is manifesting itself corporately in our church. So if your church is effeminate, well, the men are effeminate, and that, well, we had to make a clarification on the back porch with my pastor and some other people a couple Sundays ago, because my wife is always triggered by effeminate, meaning that we're taking femininity and talking about it in a derogatory way and using it as insult. But effeminate is essentially always in a negative connotation, meaning that a man shouldn't be acting, a man acting not according to his nature, but acting, being effeminate. And the church is supposed to have feminine influence and things going on within there, but ultimately it's in a liturgical man at the head of his family, leading worship, the pastors, the leadership, men leading, being the foundation for a church to thrive. Now, I don't think that you're going to have this, the third thing, if you have men in charge and if you have God-centered worship, but essentially if they're asking for you to hand your kids over at the door instead of having you keep them with you in worship, then it's probably not the church you should be at. in my humble opinion. The dividing of the church, the dumbing down the tenets of the faith and giving them into a coloring book, Crayola style for our kids. Kids want to be a part of what the adults are doing at a very early age. They want to be in. They want to know. And my pastor talked about it in his sermon this Sunday about the Passover, about how we see in Exodus that the Father was at the table. The Father was leading worship. They were sacrificing the lamb. They were putting the blood on the lintel, the doorpost and the lintel. And that was something that the children asked about. The children wanted to know. And that continued, that tradition, that celebration of Passover continued. And it was repeated so that the fathers could instruct the kids, so that the kids would be taking part in what was going on. And then they would be asking, and it would be deepening their faith experientially with all the senses, smell, taste, touch. They see it. They listen to their dad talking about it. And it was becoming all the senses reinforcing what they were a part of and what they were doing. And if you have men doing that, you have men being serious about leading their family, then you don't have them pawning it off. I mean, just think about it. If you're in a grocery store and your kid is kicking and screaming and pitching a fit, which we see all the time. First of all, you're probably not tending your garden well if your kids are pulling that kind of crap in grocery store. You need to practice that. You need to run the play at the house, practice for the game, for what you're actually really doing, and get that going and get that under control. So, okay, back to this example. You're at the grocery store, just hypothetically, your kid's kicking and screaming and whatever, and just somebody comes up and says, "Oh, that's hard. I understand. Let me just take your kid. Obviously, you can't handle this. Let me take them and I'll go and play with them while you get your grocery shopping done." I mean, in some ways, if you're a man, you're like, "Who are you? Like, get out of here. I got my kids. I know it's crazy. I am going to handle this. Get out of here. I need your help." Why is it okay for them to do that for us at church? Why have we programmed ourselves to accept that and to say, "Oh man, just take the kid. I just need a little bit of quiet, you know, whatever." And it's a lot of work to get your kids to be able to sit through worship. But it's also, once you get it, I mean, there was a time I was like, "Man, I'm going out and having to discipline my youngest. Am I going to get to hear a full sermon?" And just understanding that God is going to make all things new. He's going to bring about a completeness in your faith, even though you're missing parts of sermon because you're being faithful, stepping out and disciplining. But essentially, you know, from the top, most reverent view of God, men in charge, and they're not asking you to hand your kids over. Now, if you can't find that where you are, I mean, one, my first thing is maybe you're not looking hard enough. Maybe you just are kind of, you're going to do one Google search and you're going to be like, whatever. Okay, find the people that you know in your community that you respect, the men that you respect, and ask them about worship and where are they going, and use a reference system versus the directories on the internet and seek it out. The church may actually be meeting in a home right now. They may be a plant. They may be getting started. They may not have the building yet, that they may exist. So that's, you know, where you can actually look harder. And if not, start one. Start building where you are. Find other men in the church. Seek some accountability from another church in a little bit farther region. Say, "Hey, we'd like to build this church. It's kind of a 2-hour drive for us, but we really like to do it here. Would you guys help and provide spiritual leadership for us as we stand this up?" And I'm not a church planner. I haven't done this before, but I know that you can start small and you can start intentionally and you can set up a structure that allows accountability and you can build something now that in 100 years is glorious for God. And then the other one is move, you know, and I'll extend the invite to you. Move to Moore County, North Carolina, join Sandhills Presbyterian Church. We have actually in the process about 3 to 5 families that I've met either through this podcast or through friends that are a couple cities away. And an introduction, and I'm going after these people. I'm texting them. I'm trying to invite them to come. I'm trying to meet with them for lunch and coffee. Come to our church, experience it. And Moore County, North Carolina, just generally is amazing. It's like Mayberry and John Wick. We got special operations here. We got a bunch of dangerous dudes. We got Christian dudes that are dangerous. And we got the train station in Southern Pines. We got great little shops. It's everything. It's everything that you don't even know that you want and need. And we're kind of at the beginning of building this glorious church plan right now. And so you're actually, it's going to be more in the startup phase than in like going out to Moscow or one of those places that has a massive church and is established and is starting to kind of branch out, you get a little bit more of the startup feel to get to be a part of what's going on here. So move here. Come on, message me, email me, text me, whatever. Let's set up a time. You can talk with my pastor. Let's do this. Get in here at the ground level and let's get going. Okay. Now, once you found this church, once you know what you're going to do, here's the strategies that you need to employ once you're there. Because it's not enough to just find it and show up 5 minutes late to Sunday worship and run out as fast as you can as soon as you get the sacraments and run out the door, and hopefully you can get out faster than somebody can talk to you. Because I have to do this sometimes for families. I mean, I'm going out the side door, I'm limping around and I'm hitting them in the parking lot. What's up, dude? Where are you going? How you doing? What's been going on in your life? How's it going? Track them down. And if you're in that church and you got these people darting out, seek them, try to draw them in. But anyway, you need to try to show up any time the doors are open. Specifically for our church, that's a Wednesday night prayer meeting. That is a Sunday morning and Sunday night service. And then there are women's and men's Bible studies throughout to attend. So there are formal things that you can go 4 and 5 times a week. And our family typically is for sure going to 3 services a week. And we form, and it's easy to say, well, our family's got this going on, whatever. Okay, that's fine. But you form your family rhythms around the church. And my kids' friends are at church. My kids, I mean, literally, it's like an attitude thing. We had something going on. It's just a crazy day. My wife's exhausted. And we just, we literally, it would be highly destructive. And this is not as often, not very often at all, but sometimes say, okay, we're not going to Wednesday night. There is almost a mutiny at my family because my kids are ready to go. I mean, they want to go to church. Now, it's in some ways because they're playing with their friends afterwards. They're running around. We got a 10-acre facility and playgrounds and things like that. And they're going all over the place and they're having fun with their friends. That is a blessing to have formed our rhythms such that my kids are looking at their watch and they're saying, hey, Dad, we're going to be late. We got to go. We got to go right now. We got to get going. Okay, moving on. Try to be good at it. And that means learn how to sing. Let your sons see you practicing. Let your sons see singing loud, opening up the hymnal, following along in the words at an early age because they're trying to be like Daddy. And employ some psychology with them. You know, hey, it's hard for you to do that right now, but one day when you're big enough, you're going to be able to read this. One day when you're big enough, you're going to be like, oh, I'm big enough right now, Dad. I can open this. I can, you know, my 6-year-old's still learning to read. He still wants to have a hymnal open, whether it's even to the right one, because that's what everybody, he's looking around. He's seeing other men doing it, and he's trying to be like it. Also, don't step back and think, oh, the church is supposed to serve me. You begin serving. We had a family move in to several years back, and I've never seen a family roll up their sleeves faster and get to work. And they immediately, I mean, like within 2 or 3 weeks, they're in the crowd because they've been serving and working. They know to show up and to start to give of themselves. And so we have these people that say, oh, your church is clicky. Oh, it's what? My rebuttal to that is show me someone who shows up to every service and actually serves that feels that way. Because it's always the people that are sitting on the fence wanting them to get the red carpet to be rolled out for them, wanting to be, you know, and what goes right hand in hand with serving. Don't wait to be invited over after church. Get some food, even if it's a bucket of chicken from a fast food joint, and go into a park. Offer to break bread and have a meal with people afterwards. Don't wait for the invite, because it's easy to sit back. Oh, nobody's invited me now. Invite somebody over for a meal at your house, and then see what happens. Get into a regular rhythm. Start out. So we're going to try once a month to have somebody over. Then get to where it's once a week, whether it's in the middle of the week. It's 2 meals, 3 meals with other people. That's what you're on. It's difficult for us to do that out of the bus, but that's why we built the 70 by 30 barn, is because we're going to have 200 person meals on a regular basis where we can have open invite with people. We can slaughter these animals that morning. And it's coming. I got 50 chickens showing up next week. I kind of got in trouble with my wife because I thought they were coming in June, and I had to let her know the shipping notification that they're coming in May. So I got to build some more chicken tractors, get this thing ready. We can have good food off the land. So invite people over. And then when people get to know you, when they get to see the real you, because that's what's going to happen when you're around people as much as you're around them. They're going to get to know you. They're going to get to understand your weaknesses. They're going to get to see that one time that you weren't able to keep your anger under control, and the way that you spoke to your wife in an unkind way, or the way that you were biting in your words to your kids, or they catch you on the wrong day and you're going to mouth off to somebody at church, or you're going to do these things, hypothetically speaking. This never happened to me. Don't bolt, but stay. It's easy to run. It's easy to get upset. And that's why I could kind of tie that back into starting one, finding one, sticking with one where you're at, or moving. It's really easy to say, oh, I don't agree with this church. It's not my theology. I just need to go to a church that's just more mature because I'm such a mature Christian. No, get in there and serve, invite people over, work hard at it, and don't make it about when they start to know you, they start to realize that you're kind of a lukewarm Christian. You're kind of a Christian that acts like a Christian only on Sundays. You're not a Christian that acts like a Christian all the time. You're a person that's trying to kind of keep certain parts of your life not given to the Lord, that you want to live like the world in certain ways, and you're going to try to hide that, and you're going to try to separate it out and not let somebody see that. We start to see that because you can't fake it, because you're with other people enough, and then you run and you bolt. You say it's a problem with our church, then a few months later, a few years later, we find out that you and your wife are getting divorced, and that's happened in our church a lot of times, where we've seen families fall apart. And they're making it such a big deal, and they're bringing their drama to us, and they're saying, it's our church, and we need to do this, and how come your church is not being this spiritual, blah, 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 blah. And then they go off and they get divorced because the husband's not leading his family. The husband's not relying on the church to be that foundation to help them. I mean, we all have hard times that we need other people's help. But the solution isn't to bolt and to say it's our problem. The solution's to confess your sin to one another, to stir each other up to love and good deeds, and to let the Lord's work. And there's a beautiful diversity and strength, and not diversity and strength like the woke people that don't understand the Lord say, but because we have all these families. We have, my sons are able to not be like, well, dad's kind of a little bit weird, like, but oh man, look, there's 50 other dudes singing loud praises to the Lord, and I'm loving it. And here's the deal. I'm gonna play a little clip. This is a sister church out in Moscow. But you guys got to hear this worship. If you practice this and your kids are being raised up in this, how can they not be excited about the church and the church's work?
Ever and ever, forever and ever, the mercies of the Lord endure forever and ever.
Ever and ever.
You hear that? Hear the voices of the saints coming together? Do you think that those people singing that song just showed up to church and were able to sing like that? Do you think that they every third or fourth Sunday skipped so they could play golf or they could watch that important game? Do you think that they got to where they could create that harmonious praise? It's got a little bit of a ruckus sound too. Like that's not, if you watch the video, there's men leading that. There's men singing, and the women are coming in and beautifying that foundation of the men's voices, and it's glorious. And the kids on our church, in this church, and many churches across the U.S. are learning to sing that way. It's not just, God is my God, over and over and over again. Like, whatever the dribble that is in these, as one of my atheist friends says, the Walmart of churches. I mean, even atheists can look at these churches and say, that's not like the real church. That's ones that are kind of pretending and playing around. Yeah, they get it. The strength and the boldness of the people actually serving the Lord, actually pouring themselves out as Christ did, leading men, leading their church. That is, the world sees that and knows it's legit. And that's actually where the attacks are coming. Because the Walmarts, the Walmart churches are fine. Keep letting them do it. That's actually helping us because they go out and then they bite off all the woke stuff as soon as they leave the door. There's nothing real to that. The real church committed to each other, showing up, working at it, serving hospitality. That's where it's at. Now I've talked long enough. It's a little bit long-winded one, y'all. I apologize, but this gets me excited. I mean, that's literally why I'm optimistic. That's why I'm able to be so jacked up when I come in here and get in front of the microphone. I'm excited about life. I am loving where the Lord is taking this. As I see the government structures fall apart, as I see economic like crazy policies, printing all this money, whatever, I'm not worried about it. I serve a kingdom that will last forever and that cannot be shaken and that will live on past me, that a God that will be the God of my children's 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 children forever. Find a church. Find a church, man. Show up, get to work, and start building the vision for your family.